Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky Tracks for Horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural pace used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
To At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at Monmouth Park, and apologize for the abrupt pause, but we're just going to have to wait a few minutes here for some details, but there appears to be something just awful, potentially, that I'm not going to say anything until I get further details. We'll await some people to add details. In the meantime, let me return to James. Sorry for the abrupt break. Let's pick it back up and get through this group of races here tomorrow at Monmouth.
All right, Steve. I hope everything is okay. I'll just rip right through the stakes sequence if it's okay. Race number 9 is the Matchmaker, mile and an eighth on turf. I'm looking at using two horses in this race. First off, number one, Valedictorian, looks like she's going to be setting the pace from her innermost post. She has a 4-for-5 record at Monmouth, on the Monmouth turf, including a romping win in the Grade 3 Eatontown last summer. And I definitely will include her. Chad Brown has 3 in the field. And my top pick is number 7, Tap It Today, who I just think needed her last two starts over the winter after an 18-month layoff and a figure to receive a favorable up-close stalking trip. She's 2-for-2 on the Mama turf and 9-for-1 distance. It's right between the eyes and Tap It Today. The next race is the Monmouth Cup, which is a very interesting event. It's a 1.8 miles. There's some speed on the outside. It's namely number 10, Bodie Express. But I'm expecting number 3, Senior Investment, to receive a favorable trip up close to the pace. You know, last time he stumbled at the start at the Westchester and was never a factor. And I just think that he's more suited to 2-turn route races instead of like 1-turn route events at Belmont Park, because he's like a grinding type who has shown improved tactical speed this year. I think he could get a good trip up close to the pace from his inside post and really posted a sharp win 2 starts back in a 9-furlong Laurel Park Stake race. So my top pick in there is Senior Investment, but I'll obviously use some other ones in there as well. Number 2, Monongahela for Chad Brown, and even number 8, Just Whistle, who's a little intriguing on the cutback after that 4th in the Suburban, where he was only beaten 3 lengths for 2nd and should appreciate the class relief. The next race in the sequence is another dynamite, I think, betting race. Race 11 is the United Nations at 1.375 miles on turf. It does kick off the late All-Stakes Pick 4. I'm going to go against Arklow, who I just thought was all out in that Louisville handicap 2 starts back, falling a head short that day and was flat last time 6 days ago. Not sure if he doesn't look as sharp as he was last year. I like number 3, Mugs-O-Matic. And I thought both Mike Maker horses looked good, Mugs-O-Matic and Aquaphobia off his close 4th in the Wise Dan. Mugs-O-Matic, I think he's going to run get a good race on the front end with Paco, probably be sitting right off your top pick, Perrette. And, you know, Perrette's a horse that can't be dismissed as well from a multi-race perspective because he is entering on the improve for Raymond Lawrence. That's a race where I'll probably go at least 3 deep, maybe even add another 1 or 2, Steve. Well, and then go ahead, I'm sorry.
We'll talk because I'm going to use that for the Beat Pick contest, and I picked Perrette, and I thought this was, the more you looked at this, the more interesting it was. The pace, obviously. I mean, whoever's going to, you know, get out there, and it can be, you know, obviously it could be Perrette, but I'm going to be curious to see if anybody does,
I
response.
Do think it's going to be Mugs-O-Matic from his inside. Now, he might be sitting an up-close 2nd to Perrette, but I do think that those two horses are both, you know, obviously entering in good form. Mugs-O-Matic won a Florida Bred Stake last out. Perrette comes off that nice win in the Tiller. So, you know, that's a race, too, where number 2, Standard Deviation, you know, I'm willing to give him that race last time in that Tiller. It was never really a factor, but he was too far back. He did offer a little bit of a run at the end, eligible to move forward, and he's 2-for-2 over the Monmouth turf. You know, it's a race where I like about 4 or 5 of them, Steve, and Arklow is not one of them. So, you know, I do think that race is appealing from a multi-race perspective.
Yeah, agreed. It gets us to the second half of the stake sequence.
Yes, sir. And, I already talked about the Haskell. I'm going with Dr. Post. He's my top pick in there. The race after that is the Wolf Hill. It's a 5.5-furlong turf sprint, and there's just a lot of stalkers, closing types in this field. And obviously, number 9, Shecky Shabazz, looks tough. He'll be short odds in there. You know, he came back, and he'll be making his first start for Christoph Clement on tomorrow at Monmouth Park. But the other horse that really intrigues me a little bit is on the far outside, or towards the far outside, number 11, Animal Sale, American American Sailor. And this is a 8-year-old gelding who, to me, is just, you know, that last race really caught my eye a little bit. I know that his lead decreased in the stretch, but I just thought he was super sharp that day. And I think the potential's there for him to get a good trip on the front end with Jose Ferrer. So Checky Sabaz will be on my tickets, but I like American Sailor. I give him a wire-to-wire look in that Wolf Hill, Steve.
And this was a very difficult group to decipher, and you know you always do look for somebody to wire in these five and a half version turf sprints.
Yes, that's correct. And then the state sequence concludes with a Maui pitcher. You know, last year, Midnight Bisou put on a show in this race. This year, we have a more competitive event with She's a Julie and Royal Flag, the top two contenders. I was listening to Frank before I came on, and I agree with him. I think Royal Flag is going to take it to him tomorrow with Paco. I do think She's a Julie is eligible to run well. I wouldn't throw her out of, like, multi-race bets. But I do like Royal Flag on the front end. I think this filly is stakes quality, and I think she's going to continue, just keep moving forward for Chad Brown. Candy Rod, a 4-year-old filly out of a mineshaft mare, she's just really come on to stretching out in distance this year.
This also, you know, this race, what a great way to end the sequence, boy.
It's a little bit interesting because, you know, you look at horologists, and I think, you know, you get a horse that gets eased or pulled up in their last race, and a lot of people are going to take a negative view, and there's a chance that this 4-year-old filly isn't sharp enough to win the race, but her affinity for the Monmouth Park main track, you know, just can't be ignored. I mean, she's 4-for-4 over the track. She won the Monmouth Oaks last year going away about 11 months ago in good fashion, and, you know, if She's a Julie hooks up and Royal Flag are banging head and head around the far turn, it could set up for horologists to come with a late run if she's on her game. So you're right. It's not necessarily just a two-horse race. I thought that Bolt, you know, I took a long look at Bolt because her numbers are increasing, but I was a little dismayed that Lucky Move, who beat her last time, came back and ran last in the Delaware Handicap. Maybe the mile and a quarter distance was too far for her, but there's a filly that, for Brad Cox, you know, can't be totally ignored.
Well, the pick five sequence starts with the second of the stakes and goes right to the pitcher, so the 10th through the 14th. Anything else for the weekend, James?
Yeah, I look at the Coaching Club American Oaks, sort of like the 2018 Alabama, a whole bunch of front runner types in that. I don't think a mile and eighth is total shape's best distance. I think the race is going to set up ideally for Altaf. I love her chances in that race, and I think she's going to, you know, wind up being a Kentucky Oaks contender if she wins that race because she loves Churchill Downs. And then I've got a long shot pick today at Saratoga in race number 4, number 3, Persian Queen. She gets class relief, third off the layoff, ran a third last time against a couple horses that I think are much better than the competition she's facing, and she broke her maiden last year at Saratoga, so I know she likes the track. So Persian Queen, 10-1, race number 4 today at Saratoga.
Very nice. And for those that hadn't seen from earlier, the 5th and the 10th have come off the turf. The 5th, which was a state bred maiden special, they'll go a mile and an eighth on the main track. And you do have Linda Rice with a 2-1 MTO. So she seems to be in prime position. And then in the nightcap, they'll go 7/8, 7 furlongs in the New York Maiden 40 that was scheduled for a mile on the inner, and 3 MTOs there, including another Linda Rice, well-positioned, cold hard cash. And so the two races off the turf, and the ones that remain on. The first is on, as is the there was one other, right? There was the 7th and 8th, actually. 7th and 8th both remain on. The De La Rose, of course, the stake stays on. And then a second-level allowance, a turf sprint, as well.
And Linda Rice, I mean, two wins yesterday. I mean,
yeah.
She was like, you know, she was her stable. She had a lot of seconds and thirds, but she wasn't winning a lot of races at Belmont. But clearly, has you know, she always targets Saratoga. Has been the leading trainer there before, and yeah, fantastic start yesterday.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be looking for those kinds of themes too. Essentially, you know, when the meet used to be 3 2-week, used to think of it as 3 2-week sections, and you know, those that got off to a hot start, those that kind of waded in and then finished strong, you know, then those that just, you know, kind of chip along, you know, throughout the season, but you know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, what we get from you know, the end of the Belmont season, and particularly this year, as we discussed the other day with Wednesday with Nick Tamaro. We'll get Nick's thoughts in hour three. But, you know, if you clear too many allowance conditions downstate, you come up to Saratoga, and you know, suddenly you're you know, all the horses are up a level, so it's it gets harder. And, you know, we're also, one other thing from Saratoga this year that feels uncertain is how much two-year-old activity there's going to be, and I haven't had a chance yet to recap the day three of OBS, but starting to take shape. Two days in, and Sunday's card includes the Lake Placid, which looks good, and best of luck, James. I appreciate it, and we'll talk next week.
All right, thanks, Steve. Have a great weekend.
James underscore Scully 111 on the TwinSpires blog, and a little bit of everything from James when it came to the Haskell card, and a couple of outside plays, including today at Saratoga. Jay Pridman joining us. Jay, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. And, you know, for those that kind of left things hanging, what was delivered to me as a piece of information that was really shook me up, and turns out, knock on wood, and very happily, that that rumor was false. So very happy to move past that. Jay,
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, if you weren't listening 15 minutes ago, I took a break. Somebody sent me something.
I just woke up. It's early out here. Sorry.
No, not at all. Not at all. I wasn't going to say anything until there was more information. And the more information was that it was a unfounded rumor. So nice to... glad to handle it the way we did, even though it was, you know, you get something on your phone, and you know, from a trustworthy source, and it you know, has the potential to really shake you up. So that's exactly what happened. Jay, in terms of a busy week that we were looking forward to, the Bluegrass did not disappoint.
No, I mean, Art Collector is one of several horses who have made terrific progress and have benefited by this postponement of the Derby, and he just keeps taking steps forward and won another race this year. He's now 3-for-3 and got another strong buyer speed figure, and he's climbed right up the ladder for us. Marty McGee, who I do the Derby watch with, now has him as his third choice for the Derby. Behind Tis the Law and Honor AP at 5-1. So he's really made terrific progress, and deservedly so. His races are good, and he finishes off the race as well, and he gets good figs. So there's a lot to like there.
And of course, the, you know, the story line involving Tommy Drury appealing, and Bruce Lunsford, who, you know, certainly is given to the game for many years, and Brian Hernandez Jr., you know, who of course has had Breeders' Cup Classic glory, and you know, this a big horse for him too. So that part you know, of the story continues forward, and we'll see how they handle the lead up to Derby. Anybody else in that you want to kind of flesh out in there, because there was some interesting things that, you know, I read your recap. In fact, I even cited it with Mark Cassie and with Tommy. Flesh out what was going on behind him, Jay.
Well, first off, going back to just something you just alluded to a moment ago regarding the connections of Art Collector, I made a comment about this on Twitter, but I wanted to sort of, and a little bit in my recap, but I wanted to expand upon it, and that's Brian Hernandez, who, you know, since I've been doing these race analyses on these derby preps, where you really have to go back and watch every single horse's trip from gate to finish, you know, the process I do is I watch the race, obviously, when it happens, and I maybe watch it a couple more times just for an overview, but then I go back and watch each horse individually from the gate to the finish, and the exercise of doing that really gives you, I think, a lot of insight into the competence or lack thereof of some jockeys. And Brian Hernandez, there were so many times when I was doing this early on where there would be a horse that I'd go like, who is that? Because the horse had started in a terrible spot, you know, with a bad draw, and had worked his way to the rail, and it ended up with a perfect trip. And the horse didn't necessarily win. He might have finished fourth or something like that, but was given absolutely his best chance for success. And it has continued here with Art Collector. There's a moment in the race where Brian does something that's just very subtle but so important and so effective. The Art Collector, as they turn into the backstretch, is in between Chivalry and Swiss Skydiver. And as they move into the backstretch, he eases the horse back just a bit and gets outside of those two. So still like 5.5 furlongs from the wire, he's put the horse in the perfect stalking position where he hadn't been able to be because of where he drew and what happened going into the first turn. And it was a subtle move. It was well away from the wire, but it put the horse in the right spot. And I've just seen this so many times in different ways, the way it manifests itself. Like I was saying earlier, you know, a horse with a bad draw who's is able to get over to the rail and save ground in a two-turn race and things of that nature. And I've just seen it so many times with him. And he's not a guy who I think people put as a headline rider, you know, among the, you know, the Ortiz brothers or John Velasquez or Flavian Pratt. But as far as I'm concerned, he's as good as anybody in the country. He is just always in the right spot, and you can't ask anything more, I think, from a rider to give your horse the best chance to win. So I just wanted to give him a shout out, because I really think he's the most underappreciated rider in North America right now in terms of what his, you know, Q rating is, and yet what his ability is. He's yeah. just really good.
Yeah, you know, it's funny how there's guys in pretty much in every circuit, and you know, it can be an A circuit, a B circuit, a C circuit that are just, you know, the you know, polished journeyman riders that you know, that very quietly are effective and don't get that, you know, that warm glowing spotlight on them for some reason.
Yeah, and I don't know why it is with him. You know, he's, you know, a quiet guy, but he's a smart guy. He's a, you know, he's a good interview, and he obviously has, you know, clientele there who really like working with him. I mean, he's worked closely with Ian Wilkes, for instance, for a long time, and is obviously a part of the way they develop their horses. You know, and that's a sign of someone who's got the respect as a horseman from trainers, more than just someone who climbs aboard in the morning and they finish right. 59 and he hops off and is on to the next work. So I think he's really been an important part of the development of Art Collector. And like I said, I just thought he gave, there was just a point in that race where he did something that was just very subtle, but so important and so effective. And so just wanted to do that. But on to what you had initially asked me a moment ago about, you know, just horses behind Art Collector and how they ran. So Swiss Skydiver is going to go on towards the Oaks. I thought she ran a, you know, obviously a very good race running against 12 other males, and you know, only Art Collector beat her. She was well in front of everybody else. Then you go down the list, you get to Rushy, who finished third, and I thought he ran, you know, a good race. He veered in a little bit at the start. He was able to drop over a bit into the first turn, but he ended up kind of three wide around the first turn and made a big run on the far turn in the four path, and he couldn't stay with the top two turning into the stretch. And the weird thing was he took a long time to change leads. He was just really running kind of awkwardly in upper stretch, but once he did, he finished the race off well enough. You know, my concern with him is that being by Liam's map, that maybe, you know, when you get, now that we're at a mile and an eighth, that might be kind of the outer range of what he wants to do. And I'm not certain he's going to be suited by going a mile and a quarter. But the plan now is to go on to the Kentucky Derby, and I wouldn't blame them for trying. I mean, it is the Kentucky Derby, and he did have some legitimate excuses the other day in terms of how wide he was compared to the horses who finished in front of him. And then going down to fourth place in Forcible, who's, you know, a horse I've been really high on from earlier in the year, and I don't know, maybe I'm going to have to, you know, to wave the white flag, but I'm not going to quite yet. You know, he doesn't have any early speed. He does need some pace to set up his late run, but he ended up getting fanned really wide into the stretch, and he finished decently enough to finish fourth, and maybe he needed the race. He hadn't run in 4 months, and it looks like he'll train up now to the Kentucky Derby. The thing that was a little disconcerting to me, Steve, in this race is that in a couple of his races earlier this year at Fairgrounds, there were points in the race where he'd make a little bit of a move to get position, then wait, and then finish anew. And he didn't do that here. He was just sort of a little more steadily grinding one pace in here. And again, maybe it's because he just needed to knock the rust off, but he needs to take a bigger move than he has so far. And the one thing that's going to help him going forward, there's no doubt that a mile and a quarter is going to be absolutely fine with him, but he hasn't progressed at this point to me as well as, you know, the top contenders for the Derby right now. And I had thought back in March that he'd be farther along than he is at the moment.
Yeah, and we'll actually we'll talk about another horse, I think, as part of the Peter Pan follow that has that kind of MO, that, you know, the stepping stone look, and that the 10 furlongs versus the 9 may actually enhance, you know, there's always horses like that we discuss every spring heading toward Derby. And I every time we discuss these recaps, I tell people, you know, go to Derby Watch at DRF and read Jay's recaps, because not only is it about the horses that succeeded, but the horses that for one reason or another fell short. And Jay has maybe the most, even more fruitful than the two-year-old Del Mar preview. There's horses, you know, when Jay says they're going to do great cutting back to three quarters or seven eighths, that's when you go to town. The Privman Prophet, we're going to call it.
Yeah, no, there's definitely some that as you go on through the spring and in this year in the summer that you see and you're like, well, you know what, he might want to cut back in distance, because they're just not handling the distances that they're being asked to do. You know, like Basin is kind of turning out to be that horse, and it looks like they're going to do the right thing and cut back in distance with him and kind of make him a 7/8 type horse going forward, which is, it looks like that's what he wants to do.
And we'll get to Basin, to a subplot with him in a little bit. Let's
yes, newly crowned
Grade One winner,
Arkansas Derby. Well, he was a Grade One winner last year, but he's a Grade One winner at three now via an Arkansas Derby victory.
We'll come back to that, and we got quite a few things in addition to the prep season. What were your thoughts about yesterday? I just saw the 95 buyer that was earned by Country Grammar, and this Peter Pan may end up being kind of fruitful for a few horses.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, he ran a good, strong race, and it looks like he wants more distance. I remember talking about this horse back in February when I was in Florida. I had been at Chad's barn at Palm Meadows one morning, and we were talking about Country Grammar, and he really thought the horse was going to be a really good 3-year-old, but more of like a Belmont Stakes kind of horse. But he was hope at the time. I remember it was the week leading up to the Fountain of Youth, and he hadn't been able to get an earlier race into him, and he wanted to run him there, get a race into him. He didn't expect him to be at his best, and then go on from there to the Wood Memorial and play the hand. Well, so he ran in the Fountain of Youth. He finished fifth, and then, you know, racing in New York was shut down. And so there wasn't an opportunity to run him again where he wanted to run him until the race at Belmont, which was, what, 3-plus months later when he ran behind, you know, Tappet to Win, who just freaked that day. And it was a good, solid race. And he just hasn't been able to string races together for him for various reasons. But now he's been able to get into a pattern with him. He was able to come back in this race and in due course, and obviously took a step forward. He got a career best buyer speed figure, and it looks like he'll come back in the Travers, and the mile and a quarter is not going to bother him any. And, you know, he's a horse who I'm certain will be on our – he was on our on-the-bubble list this past week for the Derby Watch, because it certainly looked like he was with the potential to move on into the top 20, and he will now off the win yesterday. So, I thought his race was good and the kind of progress you want to see. And I thought the runner-up ran a terrific race, Caracaro, to – you know, be making his third lifetime start and first race in, what, 6 months? You know, he hadn't run since January 11, and he fought and just got beat by a horse who had recency and you know, maybe the home court advantage. But guy ran a terrific race, considering what a light schedule he'd had to this point. So I think both those horses have real good prospects going forward.
Well, and you know, ends up being a very could very well end up being a very clever use of the Peter Pan right at the beginning of the meet as a prep, and I understand from Paul Pompa and from Jerry McLennan that the horse came out terrific apparently, and everything looking ahead, if everything goes right, they'll contest. They'll contest Travers with him, so the intrigue right out of the gates opening day at Saratoga.
Yeah, no, it's good race for him.
You know, Frank was on with me to start the show too, Jay, and we talked a little bit.
Does Frank have a last name?
Miramati.
Ah, thanks. I don't know. There's lots of Franks in the world. I didn't know who you were referring to.
I'm at Monmouth, by the way. I'll slip that in, and so that might provide a little bit more context with Frank. But you know, he mentioned Mystic Guide and the way Mystic Guide was finishing in that race, and there's a horse, you know, being out of Music Note by Go Sapper, that feels, you know, with added distance could, you know, continue to move forward, and picks up a few points in with that placement yesterday, and we'll look forward to hearing from Mike Stidham about him, and you would think that they would take a swing.
Yeah, it certainly would seem like the Travers would be the right spot for him. He's another lightly raced horse who yesterday was making his stakes debut. He had run well in that same race that Country Grammar came out of, you know, the race where Tappet to Win got loose on the lead and freaked. So I just thought he was third best yesterday, but look, yeah, it was only his fourth race. He certainly looks like he's going to continue to get better, and there's another one who's, has a bright future. I just didn't see anything yesterday that to make me think that he was compromised enough that it would have changed the outcome vis-a-vis the top two.
Right. Yeah. Fair enough. He feels like a horse though that extra furlong will be to his liking as well. And speaking of More prep action, Jay, tomorrow here at Monmouth, the Haskell. And I know you did the advance for it, and we got three headliners when it comes to Authentic and Dr. Post and New York traffic. Some thoughts about tomorrow?
Yeah, it's really sort of the haves and the have-nots. You've got really the big three and then four horses who are just hoping for something, a lot to go wrong with the top three and a lot to really go right with one of the other four for them to have success. But we'll take it in maybe Post position order. So Dr. Post has the inside. And I thought his race in the Belmont was really good. He was second best on the day to Tis the Law, but when you consider how far he's come in such a short amount of time, I thought to run as well as he did in that race was really good. He's a horse who trains extremely well. If you see videos of his works, he's a horse who is gonna, he shows up in the morning and he continues to show up in the afternoon. And I was talking to Todd Pletcher the other day, and he said that the horse had continued to train very strongly coming out of the Belmont. This couple works since the race coming into the Haskell were impressive. And you know, the other thing, Steve, that I think is going to help Dr. Post, the Belmont was run around one turn, mile and an eighth, and this is a two-turn race. And I do think that extra turn is going to be a benefit to a horse like him. The one-turn race is... you've got to be much more forwardly placed usually for success in a lot of those races, and I just think Dr. Post is going to be very, very formidable tomorrow. As for Authentic, he ran a very good race in the Santa Anita Derby. He just got beat by the horse who's the current second choice for the race in Honor AP, and a horse who's, you know, I've been extremely high on for months. So I full credit to Authentic to finish second to a horse like that. My concern with Authentic, and I've said it before, and tomorrow will be another chance to see if it happens. I really think getting to a mile and an eighth is kind of the outer range of his most comfortable zone. He's buying the Mischief. They're not necessarily mile and a quarter type horses. They're unbelievably talented horses. But a mile and a quarter is not necessarily their wheelhouse. And just everything I've seen from him in his previous races has left me just wondering if going out to a mile and a quarter is gonna suit him. But that's for next time. You know, for tomorrow, he just needs to beat Dr. Post. I mean, that's what he's got to do. And he can do it. I like Dr. Post a little bit more. But it wouldn't surprise me if Authentic was able to hold on and win this race. He's going to be going straight for the lead. But he's been a little squirrely sometimes coming out of the gate. And if he doesn't break, that can be a problem. So we'll see if he can come out of the gate a little bit cleaner. He's trained very well out here since the Santa Anita Derby. His last work at Santa Anita was very good before he came to Del Mar and worked once. Also very good, so I think he'll run well. I'm just sort of bifurcated on him in terms of how he'll do tomorrow, which I think is run well, and then going on to the Derby, where I'm a little more circumspect.
Jay, by the way, congratulations. You're going to get a Haskell hat, the 2020 Haskell hat, because bifurcated was the word of the day, so well done.
No, the word of the day was Handelman, speaking of congratulations.
Oh, stop.
Congratulations to you.
Thank
for
you.
The Handelman Award. It was well-deserved. Bill was, as you know, was a great, great journalist and a guy who really dearly loved Monmouth Park. And it's hard to believe he's been gone a decade now. But I was very, very happy to see that Monmouth had presented you with that award the other day. So well done.
Thank you so much. Very kind. And we're gonna talk to Tom Lucci in a couple of minutes and about one of his very good friends. And granted, yesterday, Dave certainly shared the Monmouth press box with Bill as well. And during his days at the Trentonian and the early days of Dave's career, and everybody loved him. And certainly the the tote loved him. Because he sent it in. I love it. Well, looking forward to it. Actually, the skies are actually clearing, and so it looks like they're going to have a good Friday lead-in tonight to Haskell Day. And always, even though under the limited attendance scenario, it should be great to be here. I love it here so much. Jay, a couple of other topics, and I've got some, you know, the hard news to discuss, the Del Mar situation. But, you know, since we brought up Bill and you know, with him passing, it occurs to me to bring up Ken Church with you. And you wrote a lovely appreciation of him.
Yeah, so Kenny Church, former jockey who, after retiring, worked in publicity in Southern California for several decades. You know, I first met him in the 1980s when I was first working, you know, out of college and occasionally coming to Del Mar for my job with the LA Daily News, and then, you know, worked with him on a daily basis in the early and mid 90s when I was working on the simulcast show at Del Mar, because Kenny, by then, had worked in publicity at Santa Anita, Hollywood, and Del Mar, and then he ended up just working regularly at Del Mar as he got a little bit older, and he and his family had settled in a community a little bit north and east of Del Mar. And so just a really sweet man, a nice guy, always in a good mood, very helpful to everybody. Retired from Del Mar about, I don't know, 20 years ago or so now. His wife worked at Del Mar for a long time, too. Nancy, she worked in the Turf Club, and they moved up to Reno. Nancy passed away, I don't know, it's been probably 5 or 6 years now. And then, unfortunately, Kenny passed earlier this week. And he was just a really sweet guy to be around. And he's one of those guys, Steve, he had a lot of success as a writer. You know, he was kind of he wasn't a headline guy, but he had a really good career. He won riding titles at a number of tracks and rode some real good horses here in California that won big races in the 60s, most notably. But he retired at his mid-30s, but he never looked back. He had no regrets about hanging it up early. He did ride a few of those rocking chair derbies that they had at Del Mar in the 1970s, where they had these one-off races. I think it was about 5 years in a row for retired riders, and the winner would sit in a rocking chair, and the winner adjacent to the winner's circle. When the race was over, they called it the Rocking Chair Derby, and he won it, I think, at 74. But he would never look back, and I remember, on the rare occasion that there would be bad weather, and this was more when he worked at Santa Anita in the wintertime as opposed to Del Mar, obviously, but like when the skies would open, they'd come on the track for the first race, he would just start laughing. He'd say, "Oh, you jockeys, you're going to earn your money today." He'd laugh that he wasn't one of the ones down there getting all dirty and muddy riding in those conditions. So just really enjoyed his company.
And I'd heard his name, and I didn't know much about him. And your piece and Del Mar sent out a release as well. It really, it seemed like one of those characters that that it seems the racetrack is particularly adept at creating. Kind of a bigger than life, and clearly. Really widely, much like Bill Handelman, widely appreciated for, decades of service to the game. Speaking of riders, and Jay, you were, I think, first with the Victor Espinoza details when Victor came back positive with the from a COVID test, and it then cascaded into a much wider situation in the Del Mar jocks room. Some thoughts about where they stand and, how to reorganize, including, with the San Diego scuttled tomorrow.
Right. So the whole weekend's off. We're supposed to be racing 3 days a week for most of this meet. So no racing today, tomorrow, or Sunday. They tested all the jockeys and valets on Tuesday, got the results back on Wednesday. There were double digits numbers of jocks that had tested positive for for COVID. Fortunately, they're all asymptomatic, but still, there was just no way to go on. They had not been widely tested on this circuit for several weeks, and this was the result. And as you know, a lot of riders have been traveling, and that's the reason, you know, why nationwide we've pretty much had a stay-in-your-lane edict put up pretty much everywhere now, you know, going forward. Like, look at what's going on. I mean, Saratoga was the first to come out with that, but a number of other places are going to have that policy for the foreseeable future. So that's what went on, and you know, hopefully when everybody gets retested the middle of next week, they will be widely testing negative and without having developed symptoms in the meantime, and they'll be able to get back going again. But that's where things stand now. But obviously, you know, we'll wait. The next thing will be to see what happens when everybody's retested the middle of next week. Del Mar is going to, because of the loss of the 3 days this week, they are going to add a day here and there to the calendar. So like the first one that it looks like they're going to be able to add is on a Monday, July 27 is a day that they're going to race. So even though there's no racing this week, they're actually going to have sort of a elongated four-day weekend next weekend, assuming there's no further setbacks to the process here.
Well, it did seem like we were kind of, you know, going along pretty smoothly, but there was that specter with jocks kind of, you know, bouncing around that was kind of inviting a problem. So good that everybody has reacted with alarm and are, you know, going to get right back to, you know, kind of battening down and you know, putting in all the protective elements to, you know, to assure, you know, this is one thing that can't you can't run out of jocks. That'll be a problem.
Would be a problem. You know, and just going back to what you know, the way you got into this segment, Steve, regarding Victor. You know, I just want to say that, you know, Victor was proactive regarding this situation. He had been at Los Alamitos on July 4th with Martin Garcia and Luis Saez. And the chronology of what happened here is that on Wednesday of last week, so 9 days ago, in the afternoon, it was or early evening Eastern time, I guess, but it was learned then about Martin Garcia's positive. And because Victor had been around him, he thought, you know what, I better go get tested here. And so he made arrangements on his own to get a test on Thursday morning, which was, he was told, was going to be a rapid turnaround one. Well, it turned out to not be so rapid, and by Friday, he still didn't have the results back. And in fact, he ended up arranging to go to another place late Friday to get another test because the first place hadn't processed it quick enough, and he was able at that point to get the confirmation, or to get the results, I should say, which said that he was positive. But his initial reason for doing it was solely because of the Martin Garcia, because the Luis Saez news didn't come out until Friday, which was the day that Del Mar was opening, right? So Victor had already gone to get his test the previous day. He didn't wait and, you know, learn of two riders. He did it as soon as he found out about Martin Garcia. Then we learned about Luis Saez last Friday, right? And then obviously the Victor thing happened, and then, you know, Pratt came home and on Sunday and tested positive. At that point you're like, well, you know, this is going to be an issue here. And it was after, you know, that Del Mar decided to test everybody. So, and we saw the results of all that, you know, a couple of days ago.
Well, and I understand, you know, there was some frustration on you know, Victor and team's part for terms of direction and getting this, you know, and you're absolutely right to acknowledge in his proactivity, because it seems like there was really no major concern you know, from the venue's part to be on alarm for this. So, in the long term, it's going to be a benefit, I think, industry-wide, because everybody else is now securing their jocks' rooms and making any other special arrangements. In fact, the next week when we talk to Bill Gallo ahead of the start of the jump season at Saratoga, the jump riders will not, they'll be kept completely sequestered. They won't, be in the jocks' room. They've got their own quarters. So, special arrangements being made everywhere at this point, and also, I think the testing will continue, to be, constant. And you could see yesterday at Saratoga, I've been here a couple of hours at Monmouth. Everybody's, wearing masks. Yesterday in New York, just operating, doing their jobs, and dealing with it. And that's the way the industry can continue to operate smoothly.
Yep. No, and I know there's one other thing that is probably going to come up in the next 24 hours or so that we might as well make sure everybody sort of understands the triptych on this, and that's regarding Mike Smith, because I'm sure people are going to be like, well,
yes,
how can Mike Smith be riding at Monmouth Park tomorrow? Mike Smith has been very smart about navigating this properly. He has not ridden in California since June 21st. He hasn't ridden at Del Mar at all. He hasn't been at Del Mar at all. And so it's not like he's leaving Del Mar and then ineligible to come back. After he rode at Keeneland last week, he stayed in Kentucky so that he wouldn't have to come back to California and then when you go to New Jersey where there's a quarantine issue going on. So that's how he's able to go to Monmouth tomorrow. And he hasn't been, like I say, he has not ridden in California since June 21st. He didn't ride at Los Alamitos the weekend of July 4 because he was in New York. Last weekend, he didn't ride the weekend at Del Mar because he was at Keeneland. So he's not been here, and he stayed in Kentucky this past week to avoid everything out here and to stay in a classification that allows him to do this, because otherwise he wouldn't be able to. He's still, Monmouth the other day put out a notice saying that any rider who comes to the track has to, pass a temperature check and things of that nature. So he still has to do all that there tomorrow in order to ride there. And then when he gets back to California on Sunday, similar to what happened with Pratt last weekend, Del Mar has arranged for him to be tested immediately upon return to California on Sunday, with the idea being that they can get that test result back quickly and know where he stands. Hopefully everything will be fine and he'll be able to ride immediately next weekend. But if, God forbid something has transpired in the interim, he'll be able to begin a quarantine upon his return to California early. But he's going to get tested tomorrow and he's going to get tested Sunday as well, and he stayed in Kentucky this past week. So that, I know it's going to come up, well, how is Mike Smith doing this? He's been at Del Mar. No, he hasn't. In fact, he hasn't ridden in California since June 21st at Santa Anita.
Well done.
So there you go.
Good job, Jay. I appreciate that aspect, because I toyed with asking you about Mike Smith, and when the overnight came out on Wednesday for this card, and he was he was scattered on the variety of mounts, it popped in my head, and I kind of queried out loud. I said, I got to see how Mike has handled this, but it seems like Mike Smith is wiser about everything, the way he has managed things, not just this. I mean, he just seems to do everything right.
Well, this is a situation where you've got to be smart about what all is going on, and I think he's trying to do the best that he can in terms of this aspect of things. So, hopefully we'll get through the situation here. Hopefully people will be smarter about how to handle things going forward, and we can have a safe and sane rest of the summer.
Jay, last of the hard news, you had a busy week. The Arkansas Racing Commission took a little extra time, as sort of hinted, going back to when news of the positives came out, took a little extra time, but once the split samples came back on Gamine and Charlatan, the decisions were pretty swift. Talk a little bit about the aftermath of the positives, the disqualifications, and the suspension for 2 weeks of Baffert.
Right. So when I was on your show a week ago, we talked about this, and the Arkansas Commission, person who I'd been dealing with on a regular basis there since this all started, had said that there was no announcement yet when they had gotten the split samples back, but that he expected sometime next week, meaning now this week, that the stewards would make a ruling, which did happen. There was a hearing on Monday. Telephonically, there was the ruling came out on, it was dated Tuesday, but it wasn't distributed to the media until Wednesday. And, you know, as we talked about on your show last week, I mean, even though the medication that was cited for both Gamine and Charlatan is a legal medication to use, it is not a legal medication to have at the level it was found in those two horses on race day, and that's something from which you're disqualified. And there have been mitigating circumstances that Baffert and his team have talked about with the racing commissioners, and that his attorney has elaborated on in the stories that I've done. Despite that, you know, as the ruling said regarding Baffert specifically, it said that the ruling said that even if there's a third party issue here, and what they've talked about is that there was cross contamination from a pain patch that assistant Jimmy Barnes had used, and that it moved it on his back and it gotten on his hands, and then when he tied tongue ties, that's what caused the issues with those horses. The ruling specifically that Oakland put out said, quote, "The trainer shall be responsible for and be the absolute insurer of the condition of an entry the trainer enters regardless of the acts of third parties." As you mentioned, you know, not only were these horses disqualified, so now, for instance, as we were talking about at the top of this segment, Basin is now the winner of the division of the Arkansas Derby, in which he had crossed the wire second, so because Charlatan has lost that race, and he's lost the grade one. But also Speech, for instance, is now considered the winner of that allowance race that Gamine had won. And Speech has gone on, you know, she's run twice since, including her win last week in the Ashland Stakes. And Baffert has been suspended for 15 days, August 1 through the 15th. But his attorney told me that, you know, all of that was going to be appealed. I don't know where that stands as of now. But, you know, that's sort of the next, I guess, part of the story as to whether they get an injunction regarding the suspension, or if Baffert just serves the days the beginning of, you know, from Aug 1 to 15, and we go on from there. So we'll wait and see what happens in that regard. But that's what I know as of the moment.
Well, I appreciate it. And that question of when the penalty would be served, it obviously enters in because there's I'm just thinking 3-year-olds alone. I mean, not that he's restricted to 3-year-olds, but because he's got horses coming to New York for the Whitney, etc. And that was one of the questions that immediately bubbled to the surface the other day when the details came out. Full dance card, Jay.
Yeah, for a week where there was no racing out here. It was crazy. It was like, now what? You know, it was like, oh, Del Mar's canceling for the weekend. Oh, just
two DQs and a suspension. I mean, it was just one. The hits just kept on coming. So hopefully we'll have a nice weekend of racing at Saratoga and Monmouth, and get Del Mar back up and going next week, and can have a little more. I guess what goes for normalcy these days. Nothing's normal, but normal-ish, normal 2020 for the rest of the summer.
Exactly. Exactly, and they, assuming that racing commences back next week, they'll run the San Diego and right away and redraw that.
Yes, so that's exactly right. So the San Diego has basically been postponed by a week. It's going to be run next Saturday on the same card that the San Clemente for 3-year-old fillies on grass will be run, and then the Eddie Reed, which was supposed to be run Sunday, has been pushed back exactly a week and will be run next Sunday's card. So there's going to be two stakes at Del Mar Friday, three Saturday, and two Sunday,
nice.
Assuming we're back up and going, which I would hope would be the case. So, but that's exactly right, Steve. Postpone the race by a week on the San Diego.
Well, and of course, the return of Maximum Security, and that field came up good, and we'll be looking forward to it. And actually, with Del Mar not on the slate tomorrow, and based on when this Haskell card and the stakes action unfolds, from 5 o'clock, 4:40 on till 6:50, really Monmouth will be the major focus of horse players tomorrow. So it should be good for them, and everybody can reorient and be ready next week for Del Mar. They should have a banner weekend, and hopefully they can make up for some of the lost revenue. I mean, this has been so hard on everybody. You got to admire the way, track managements and everybody involved just keeps dancing to whatever crazy tune gets played. Not easy.
No, not at all. Wouldn't want to have to be in those positions. I will tell you this though, as best I can tell from just looking at the around the country at how things have been handled in terms of the way the jockeys' room should be maintained, in terms of the way testing goes on in terms of access to the backside, in terms of trying to accommodate owners and being respectful of media, I would hold Naira up as the paragon of virtue through this.
I can't agree more. They've tried to anticipate without making promises, and then has reacted, and by all rights, actually. The relationship of Naira with the state and with the health officials, it really has been smoother than you would possibly think. And then when you think about the sheer volume of individuals involved, between 700 and 800 tests in advance of the Saratoga move, and the barns are being careful about trying to limit the number of personnel that they're sending up to limit that portion of it. So on every front, we talked to Pat a couple of times this week, and he's done a great job. They talked to Martin Panzi yesterday and Dave O'Rourke, and they certainly yesterday, by the way, I haven't mentioned it, $19 million like a 20-something% boost over last year's opening day. So really a good start to the meet business-wise as well, and hopefully Del Mar can get the momentum back next week, Jay. Jay, lots to look forward to here tomorrow. We'll recap Haskell, and we'll start to look forward to that Ellis Park Derby, which is garnering plenty of attention, and Travers, and a lot more.
Well, have a great weekend, and make sure Frank Miramati takes you out for pizza. I hear he knows a place or two around there.
We got a push or two, and in fact, I've received already a couple people said, does Frank have any place that he recommends that we go? And I think so. I think so.
He might, yeah. I hear he likes pizza.
He is unbelievable. Jay, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Have fun there.
Jay Privman, everybody, and Thoroughbred LA tomorrow with Jay. Look forward to that. And we'll stay right here. Hammer standing by. And this, you know, there's more and more. There's almost no place that isn't an old stomping ground of Rick Hammerly, but certainly Jersey is. And Hammer, he's up in the great Northwest in the wilds and doing some camping and some hiking. Hammer, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning to you, Steve. I tell you, actually driving, just left Moab, Utah, and headed to Wyoming, and we're driving along this nice scenic piece of road along the Route 128 along the Colorado River, and you had your little deal this morning. I almost drove into the river. I'm sure glad that whatever happened didn't happen. So that was, you know, a little worrisome. Called a couple local people there immediately to see what was going on. Nobody knew anything, so I figured that was good news. But no, you're definitely at one of my favorite spots of all time. I mean, Gene and I always talk about, you know, I'm one of the few people that actually would move to New Jersey instead of move away from New Jersey. Love it there. Monmouth Park, of course, I spent my probably 12 best years of my life there, just enjoying the area and the racetrack you know, it's Haskell Day. I mean, so tomorrow's Haskell Day. It used to be on a Sunday. For years and years and years, we had it on a Sunday. And a couple of reasons, just to set apart. I think the Million was around. There was all stuff going on. But we had the Hamiltonian up at the Meadowlands back when they were, you know, rocking. And we would do the double dip. So Sunday became, you know, a big day up there. But now it's back on Saturday. And so last year was the Heat Gate, right? It was hot, and they delayed it and all that. So this year is something different, but it's something different for everybody. So when I heard you this morning, I go, that's Frank's voice. And I'm thinking, gosh, Frank doing Saratoga today or something? And then it hit me, you're down there. And when you both sounded, you know, so enthusiastic, because, you know, two foodies sitting together at the same table, it oozes enthusiasm. So anyway, but... yeah, taking a little break in the action, but good to get out. You know, once again, my little travel tip, Moab, Utah, if you've never been there, which I had never been there, what a place. If you like the outdoors, you can do anything there. I mean, we were on the river yesterday doing a little, you know, you can do four-wheeling, you can fish, you can boat, you can hike, you can see everything. And close to Arches National Monument, which we did, of course, in Canyonland. So very cool on our way to Wyoming to take a little break and get ready for the second half of the year, which for me includes Kentucky Downs, and we move on from there. We've got Oaklawn ahead of us, and so it's just good to get out for a while, I guess. They shut L.A. down anyway, so everyone says you've made a good choice. But talk about, we've got to bring up the Handelman Award just like everybody else. Congratulations for that, And you know, I had the pleasure of working with Bill there for years and years at Monmouth, and he did. I tell you what, he loved the game so much. He did whatever he could to get Monmouth Park on the front page of Asbury Park Press whenever possible, and not just the sports page. I'm talking about the front page. If he could get a little blurb in there, he did. And he had his own room upstairs to bet. When he came off the elevator, you made the right down at the end of the hall, and that was Bill's room. And, you know, he wasn't a huge player, you know, money-wise, but, boy, a race didn't go by unless he was in it. And just a positive guy. And, you know, it went too soon. But the congratulations to you, Steve, because you're kind of a Jersey guy as well.
Well, I've explained my the year I spent living in Brielle, and the opportunity to, you know, come here multiple days a week was irresistible, and I didn't do well because I couldn't beat Julie Crone, and if you bet with her, you didn't make any money, and if you bet against her, you lost money. So it was it was a leaky vessel that one summer, but this was the first place I could literally come, you know, and see races every day in the afternoons. I'd get some work done, and then, you know, come over, and there's almost no place or no opportunity better than coming here and then heading down for a shore dinner somewhere and the dining up and down the shore is great. It's really a pretty magical. You can spend the morning, early part of the day at the beach, and then come here. There's very, very few places. I guess Del Mar is probably the closest. I mean, in terms of that, in terms of the relaxed atmosphere and the sun and the sun and fun concept. That's probably the closest parallel.
You bring up Julie Crone. Exactly, she came there, and I remember she was winning everything. It's like, oh my gosh, I got a track where a girl was winning the stuff. How, where am I? And it turns out that the girl's Julie Crone, one of the best riders of all time. But as we carried on, and when Julie moved on and went up to New York, and who came in? Jersey Joe Bravo, and he won everything too. And speaking of that, he's on Dr. Post tomorrow in the Haskell, and of course I happen to turn it on. Everybody's on the bandwagon. Sorry, Todd, but I've never really been an authentic believer as far as going derby wise, and I think Jay mentioned something about his limit going. Mile and eighth might be the tip of it, but once again, the way Monmouth plays, especially the speed horses, as you know. Mile and 16th horses, they can carry and go out to mile and eighth. It's pretty much no problem there, especially for this type of horse. Just never been that impressed with him. It's hard to tell when they've only run a few times. Honor AP and him have taken turns beating each other. It's his perfect racetrack. It's Bob Baffert. It's the Haskell. He wins them all the time. But I think Dr. Post is sitting in a good spot. I like him tomorrow. And what a great accompanying card they put together there, 14 races. And I say there's only 6 stakes. Normally they have 8 or 9. They were the first place that I ever went to that had basically an all-stakes program on a big day. And it's always stuck with me. So hence, I've always added a lot of stakes wherever I've been and tried to make those big days bigger. But the races all came up good, especially as territorial as it's becoming now. People aren't as shipping as much, and Monmouth Park's one of those tracks that relies on shippers to fill out their stakes. And boy, they came through with it. Being able to run that Molly Pitcher as the last race with 11 entries is just it's just great. So, I wish I was there, but I'm looking around the park lot. I'm sitting here. I'm going to take one of these Colorado plates, because with a California plate, you can't get anywhere anymore, right? I don't think I could even come to New Jersey with a California plate anymore. Really miss you. And I got to say, yesterday, we were getting on a boat, and I actually heard the word Saratoga from someone here. So got a little smile back and forth, and so opening day in Saratoga has made it into Utah, and you know what? It's just a welcome just to hear that Saratoga's open. It really gives us, it keeps that hope going that, you know what, things are still rolling, and they obviously waited because they pounded that card. Basically it's kind of an average card, but that's why you can see people question, well, why are they going to Saratoga? Why aren't they staying at Belmont? Because that's why. It's Saratoga. People bet Saratoga. And that feel is still in the air, even though we don't get to feel it.
Well, and that, for those that were concerned about, things like the field size, it's kind of funny that the first the first set of races, the first 5 races, to some degree, the first half of these cards are going to be a little bit more narrow, and then the tendency of the racing office is to backload the second half of cards. Well, all it did was turn around and produce a $35,000 pick 5. So you don't have to worry. The puzzles will take care of things in a lot of cases.
Absolutely. Would it take one day to shake back and remember we're at Saratoga, and you can't just gloss over any horse. You really have to look deep at every horse when you're handicapping. And I think that's what you meant, is this isn't just, you know, it's the graveyard of favorites and not just the stake races. I mean, any you know, people come and they point for those races up there regardless, and 100% right. You know, it wasn't 3-5 all day long. It was some nice prices, and I think that's going to continue the whole meet. And, you know, obviously we're talking a lot about Saratoga, not a whole lot about Del Mar, because they're not running, and that's, you know, it's terrible. And, you know, how many years have you heard me scream about taking a break sometime in California, and they don't? And you know, it's nice to have the break, because if they do come back, it will make it better. But breaks are always better when you're taking them yourself and not when you're forced to take them. And, you know, they just run into the situation, and, you know, they had their own testing protocols, and they went by them, and they had to change it. And, you know, I hope they're able to come back next week and it's not forced. I know they asked for an extra day for the Monday, so they can try to get 4 days in next week. And, you know, let's just hope it goes smooth. But, you know, that's one other reason why they bet so much at Saratoga. But let's, you know, hopefully Del Mar gets back online in a couple weeks, and we have the old, you know, Saratoga Del Mar, which, you know, with the 2 o'clock post out here, really is a full day of racing for everybody for the rest of this time while we get to this darn virus. But anyway, it's great to hear talk to you from out here in actually Grand Junction, Colorado, is where we are now, and headed up to Wyoming. And interestingly enough, tomorrow, Saturday, we'll be up in Bighorn Country, where we'll be at the Polo Fields. FlyingHPolo.com. Check it out. They've been playing polo here for 120 years up there, my buddies told me. And I'm
very
not a
cool.
big polo guy. But this is like where some of the United States Polo Association comes during the summer. They have these huge fields. I've seen the fields. I haven't seen a match, wherever they call it. Right below the Bighorn Mountains. It is so cool, as you can imagine. And it's like a hunt meet to back up the cars and, you know, pop open the six pack and you know, watch the old polo match. So we'll be poloing it in Wyoming tomorrow, and then
That didn't sound good. that sounded like Hammer just got hit by a mallet. Case.
Coming along. So anyway, it's all good.
We lost you there for a minute.
Anyway, I was just telling you about the polo, and it's all good here, and we've got Gina, my daughter and her boyfriend are caravanning with us, so we got the whole got the whole crew. But hit the road, everybody. I'm telling you, we got a beautiful country. Go out and see it, and now's a good time to do it, because there's not many people on the road, and
it's a good point.
It's a good head cleaner, I'm telling you. You don't have to see the news. You don't have to see anything. People are smiling, and anyway, always a pleasure, and I'm glad that you're representing me at the at Monmouth Park this weekend, because it's just always a great spot. So enjoy it, and we will talk, I guess, during the week.
Hammer, have a terrific time, and I know you love these trips out into the hinterlands and the national parks, and it sounds like you've already had a great time, and we'll hear more next week. Rick Hammerly, everybody, away they go on your Twitter, and send some photos, send everybody a little travelog. All right,
they'll be going out today and tomorrow. I got a few backed up.
I love it. Rick Hammerly, everybody. Let's take the top of the hour break, just a couple of minutes in, and we got Nick Tamaro. We got Tom Liucci is going to visit with us as well from here at Monmouth. And before we wrap up this morning, Mike Welch. And we'll get the early clocker report from Mike. And, of course, you know, just a day in, plenty of time to get the season package of the DRF clocker report. And help you with the winners. In fact, Country Grammar yesterday, there was real evidence. Oh, and by the way, speaking of Country Grammar, Rich Eng with another 50% score. Rich yesterday, Thrill hit the board in that race that Trombetta scored for Three Diamonds, Escape Fund, at a nice price. But Thrill was a decent third in there. But Country Grammar was Rich's play yesterday as well. And if you didn't hear it earlier this morning, 95 buyer in the Peter Pan. And looks like they're going to be thumbs up toward Travers. Very good. Quick timeout. Back for third hour. Live from Monmouth Park, Haskell, tomorrow. Fast Times on the Jersey Shore. Back after this.
This is with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horstman, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.